up here in my home. 500 stations on the TV screen. 500 versions of the same old thing. Y'all know it's crazy, and it's driving me insane. Well, I don't wanna be a Superman. I just wanna go somewhere, use my hand to keep it simple. Oh, real simple. You know, I call my doctor.
Good luck with that, keeping things simple. I like that too, keeping things simple, but it doesn't always work out that way. That's Keb Moe. He used to be Kevin Moore, but he kept things simple and became Keb Moe. And that is the title track of his 2004 album. He won a Grammy the following year for Best Contemporary Blues. Good for him. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we have some things to talk about today in a mental vein. Your president, I'm giving him to you. I don't want him. Is overseas, impressing everybody that they had the wrong picture of him. He's really a very calm, very cool, collected guy. And he's just trying to do the best thing for America. And he's mingling with other heads of state. He'll be talking soon with members of heads of state who also belong to NATO and other international organizations. Quite frankly, I turned off from this whole thing because I have the awful feeling that we're being taken for a ride in the open. You know, he's not masking it anymore. People generally, when they get to this level of power, having never been at this level of power before, they kind of lose it in public. And there's nobody who can pull their chain, nobody who could tell them, listen, you're way over the fence here. Come back in. You don't need to hog everything. You don't need to head up everything. You don't need to bump people out of the way just because you need to take a photograph. You know, people watch the way you behave. And so far, the president has been performing as the quintessential ugly American. There's no sense of civility or couth or training, just plain manners and training. He has not yet been civilized, and he should not be let loose he should not be inflicted on innocent people, is what I'm saying. He clearly had the wherewithal and enough of a mindset to launch a campaign, even as a total neophyte, and pull off a win. That was spectacular. But look what we got. We have reached month 7 in his administration, and we're not clear what the hell is going on in Washington, D.C., and that's precisely what he wants. Because without an articulated plan, he could do just about anything. We don't know what he intends to do, so we have no basis for of comparison for what he actually is doing. We've never seen this kind of in-your-face nepotism ever in recent years. I don't know any time in which this country seems to be a family enterprise named Trump. And those will be the essential qualifications for whatever job you choose to place yourself in. There are no tests, there's no barometer, there are no resumes needed, no background checks. What's your name? Oh, my name is Ivanka Trump. Hired. Well, what am I going to be? Oh, we'll figure it out. And that's how, in 2017, that is how the United States is operating in the open, like a mafia outfit. And we know that there's so many errors being made here. But is the president going to do whatever a reasonable leader would do if somebody who is an underling does the wrong thing, or put more precisely, doesn't do the right thing, gets fired? That's not going to happen. So we have a very unorthodox, and I would say practically criminal enterprise, similar to the Clintons, but way, way in your face. There, this is gangster leadership. Yeah, it looks interesting with a nice tie, which, by the way, is held together with scotch tape. And he's in the business of leading a country, the most powerful country, and he's got the most toys. This is exactly what leaders of his ilk, they can't get over the fact that they have at their disposal an army, an air force, a navy, you know, they've got the Marines, they got everything they wanted, because now they've got the title to go with it, Commander-in-Chief. And in the meantime, we the people have no way, really, except to go out into the street and scream our lungs out. We have no defense against the likelihood that somebody so infatuated with his own accomplishments will see specifically to his own accomplishments. And the rest of the world could take care of itself. The office of President of the United States was commodified a long time ago. The whole matter of politics was commodified a long time ago. It has nothing to do with the welfare of the people. It's just, well, I'm president, that ought to pay off at some point. I got to make a living with speeches. Well, they fix that really early, and that is they do the favors up front so that on the back end they can collect the agreed upon pay and it wouldn't look like a bribe. It would just look like, well, you know, we're paying the president just what he's worth. It's an open market, after all. It's a highly competitive market. You know, the speaker's bureaus. And we are lucky to have, as one of our clients, we are lucky to represent Mr. Obama and Mrs. Obama. And they are in high demand. And yes, $400,000 for a one-hour speech is what he's worth. And we don't care who is upset about that. It's a competitive world. He's not committing a crime. But the market he's in, being competitive as it is, we are so lucky to have them. Meanwhile, that's money coming to them for things that had been executed years before he decided or before he had to leave office. This is what's going on. So you, as a voter, you don't get a sense that the people occupying the highest office of the land really have some kind of scruples, that they wouldn't go all the way low. They wouldn't go rock bottom to chase the money they agreed to have while they were president or occupying some other major office. But in the end, this is what it is. The people have unrealistic ideas. They still believe in the power of the presidency to resist this and to set an example, to do the right thing. We're still operating under the illusion that these folks are clean, and that's what they want to be, and that their priority is service to the country. If you're still thinking that, you need to really get a grip. That's not what's going on here. And everybody is doing it. And we could thank the Clintons for that. They shamelessly put their offices, the various offices that they've had, up for sale to the highest bidder. They weren't even pretending about it. They weren't hiding and cutting these deals, you know, in an alley someplace and under the cover of darkness. It's right there for you all to see. Because I deserve it. Well, in the case of Donald Trump, we had talked before about the traits he was showing us, the signals he was sending us about what is his brand of craziness and crookedness. And it showed up very often. And people forced themselves, and some thought, oh, isn't this great? He is not a traditional leader at all. He's cussing and he's carry on like, you know, he's ready for a barroom brawl at all times. And that is the level at which he loves to function, and he's accustomed to functioning. Remember I told you in discussing swamps and sinkholes? He's out of the swamp. He knows the swamp very well. The world of real estate was one of the earliest swamps and one of the oldest swamps America has had. You look into the world of real estate, I mean, high profile people in the world of real estate, and it is a very ugly picture. You get to see how they behave, how obsessed they are with money, and what they will do to hold on to it. But real estate is a very murky world. You have felons galore in the world of real estate. Fathers fighting their sons. Brothers fighting their sisters over money. And you have bona fide crazy people because the money kind of addles their brain. It is so important to have money that a lot of these things that should alarm people actually don't. They don't alarm. I talked about the fact that Barron, Donald Trump's youngest child with his third wife, I mean, they were touting that he had his own floor at Trump Tower in New York City. That is alarming to anybody who has a notion about the relationship between environment and what you end up being. How could you leave a child by himself, essentially, for so long in the course of a day? What does that breed into a child? What does it say about the parent-child relationship? They intend that it should say to the world how wealthy they are, that they don't have to worry or bother to be inconvenienced about the thing that we call parenthood and parenting. He's well taken care of. And how do we know that? Well, he has his own floor. End of story. He lacks for nothing except cuddling, warmth, you know, the regular stuff. If you look at him closely, he doesn't smile. They don't smile. These are not smiling people. And that's very, very indicative of where their hearts and minds are. They are redirecting all of that toward wealth, accumulating wealth, creating wealth, and using wealth as the across-the-board answer or solution to everything. In the swamp of real estate, we have seen some really nasty characters. I don't know if you recall Leona Helmsley. She was the queen of New York wealth and the queen of New York real estate. And she was mean, the queen of mean, she was called. Why? She would prefer to raid her helper's bureau of, you know, clothes. And go through the chest of drawers and take out whatever underwear she wanted. Now, this is the poor helper. A poor helper. Leona Helmsley just had an idea that was too good. Who is she? Who does she think she is? To wear better quality underwear? No, that's mine. And that's what she would do. She disinherited her son and wouldn't talk to her own grandchildren. You know, these are the kinds of things that you see all the time. It's the first swamp in the United States. So when President Trump vows to drain the swamp, he might have forgotten that he is a creature of the swamp himself. And at some point, he would have to behave like one. And there are many instances in which he has behaved like a creature of the swamp. And he's gotten away with it. Some people think it's so cute. The press was supposed to be serious about these things. Just think, he always so cute. There he goes insulting people again. He is so funny. Well, it seems that people don't think it's funny. And the people who don't think it's funny matter a great deal. They come from a different system of crime, the sinkhole. Since I've talked about it, you know, I too am amused by the comparison. Are you from the swamp or are you from the sinkhole, where your very existence depends on remaining loyal to somebody else's criminality, and you go down the chain so that you pull one string and a whole bunch of people are directly affected. So that without loyalty, you're dead. It's a matter of loyalty, absolute loyalty. Which is why we're hearing such craziness from people in this administration who should have thought by now that one of the reasons that they are where they are is that they could make a definitive difference in elevating people who had been blocked from achieving progress in their lives. But as I said, loyalty to your patron is number one. Well, we saw this week a very interesting development, and we'll follow it. And it closely mirrors the thinking that we had been talking about previously about what should be done about Donald Trump. This is no longer a theoretical matter. There are people who are very concerned about his state of mind, because some of the things that he's been doing and saying are so out there. They're so bizarre. There are concerns about his mental acuity. At the beginning, people chalked it up to, well, you know, they hate Donald Trump because he has accomplished the impossible. They hate Donald Trump because he has energized a sector of the nation that people had been ignoring for years. They hate him because he's successful at the ruse, a multi-millionaire expressing sympathies with the forgotten. He's not necessarily done anything in terms of, you know, bulk. Okay, he will do something and make it so big you would think that this is part of his general task to lift people up in whatever sector. But it is, in fact, a very key way that people operate when they're very good at public relations. You select a group of people who ordinarily would not get any attention at all. You create a movement around them or an issue around them that you could easily or sort of easily deliver on. But in any event, the mere fact that you appear to be paying attention to them is enough, because it signals to the wider constituency, well, here's a guy. This is the guy we need. He's getting things done, when in fact he isn't. The things that he's getting done and that he's making a big deal about are those things that would readily draw attention, and it would be made to appear that he is on point. He's doing his thing. Now, how come the other presidents before him didn't do these things? It's a very fascinating thing. But in the meantime, in the middle of all of this, which is largely about creating the illusion of activity and accomplishment among certain key points, let's say, there's a lot of talk, but there isn't real accomplishment. But he is very good at conflating the two to make it look like it's one and the same, and they're not. So we worried about his behavior. I called him President Chaos. His administration at one point looked like, you know, the average guy walking down the street would be just as capable running the ship of state. No direction, no precision about what it is he is currently involved in, What would it yield? Who benefits? None of these things. He seemed to be picking things out of the air. And because he has the resources, he could pursue these things. And they're not long-term things. They're not short-term things, but he makes them appear to be long-term things accomplished as if they were short-term things. I mean, he's that good. Today, for example, he declared that the U.S. and Poland will strike up a trade deal in the next 15 minutes. Now, that might be a flippant statement. What he's trying to communicate to all of us is he's that good. He could wrap things up in 15 minutes. So the inference also is that the presidents you guys had before me, I mean, they were joking around. So it's always a psych, always a psych. But in any event, we still are the people, and we're still seeing that games are being played by this president, principally on creating the illusion of leadership, not actual leadership. He doesn't have a plan. Remember, that was the first thing I said about Trump and his candidacy. It's that powerful. You are elected president when every expert said, sorry, it can't be done. And then on top of that, you have no plan. You have no articulated plan, even up to now. And presidencies are, rise and fall on these things. What is your plan? There is no plan, so that nobody could argue with him about a plan, if there's no plan. And he is not engaging in discussions about, well, where are you going? Meaning, where are we going? He'll let you know when he's ready. So the president has taken, very early in the game, the notion that he calls the shots all the time. Our job is simply to have faith, to shut up, and wait to see what he tells us he wants us to do next. Which is a very interesting expression of a distorted view of power, especially in a so-called democratic society. Practically nothing he has done so far hints that he has a good and strong appreciation for democracy. That's not how this game is being played. So after noticing some of the things that Trump has been doing, there were sectors, even within the Republican ranks, that were perturbed. We had psychiatrists and psychologists publicly expressing concern because we don't know where we're going. And it's perfectly fine. That's exactly what he wants. He wants us to be comfortable about not knowing where we're going and to trust what he says. And that is enough. Just trust what he says, because he knows where he's going and he owns us. So we should have enough faith in a person like that and say, well, he accomplished all these things that heretofore were said to be without any precedent. So he must know what he's doing. He doesn't. He doesn't know what he's doing. He is making it up as he goes along. But we have had public concern and public expressions about the president's mental acuity. And we got a hint yesterday that it is not just a theoretical matter. They want both members of Congress who are Republican and Democrat, so it's not one party thing. It's taken on traction now. And what they want to do is to compel him to submit himself to a battery of tests to determine whether the president is fit, whether he's mentally together. Now, I saw a smattering of coverage about it, and there is a kind of joke lurking under it, but it's a very serious matter. For them to get these legislators, for them to get to the point of having this point examined and doing something to signal distress about what they're seeing. It's not just one person anymore. It's not just Democrats seeking revenge against the Republicans. They're looking to the Constitution to find out if the 25th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gives enough grounds to initiate this legal action. The problem is that the 25th Amendment of the Constitution isn't clear about it. They haven't addressed this matter, specifically the issue of a president's mental condition. So they don't know if they can, you know, depend on the strength of the Constitution, if the Constitution has enough elastic for them as a group, this is Republicans and Democrats, to test this matter, whether they can look to the Constitution as the basis of their case to legally declare the president mentally unfit. So the question I have for you today is, what do you think? I mean, I'm speaking very seriously about this because it's developing as a very serious issue. And we should not dismiss it as a kind of inside joke. The man does, in fact, call the shots on whether the nuclear war is at hand. So we have to be mindful of that. So we'll take this break and come back to your thoughts on A, are these legislators motivated truly by concern about the state of affairs of the state? Is this something that you think is so important to them that it is number one on the list of reasons that they want to proceed with a kind of public inquiry into the mind of the president, hinting, of course, that they think something is wrong? I've said it. I could be wrong. But the question is more intriguing than anything else here. How does the United States, for the first time in history, approach the question of removing a duly elected president because of strong belief or strong opinion that he's gone potso? And if there is validity to such an action, what's to stop a whole raft of moves like that, political moves to get rid of political challengers or enemies? That's a very ticklish question. So I'm looking to see how your brain is working today on that. The second thing is, what will be the criteria? How will sanity in a president be measured? Is there such a thing, a basic test? And will we, in time, because this is, as you know, it's going to go on for a long, long time, is there going to be resolution of this question in terms of what will be used as the barometer? Who is going to do the questioning? And what will the questions be? All right, that's enough on your plate. We'll take this little break and come back to you and your thoughts at 888-874-4888 right after this.
I call my doctor on the telephone. The lines were open, but there was nobody home. Press 1, press 2, press pound, press 3. Why can't somebody just pick up the phone? Talk to me. Y'all know it's crazy. You know it's driving me insane. I don't want to be a Superman. I just want to go somewhere. Use my hand and keep it simple. Yes, I do. Real simple.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm your Trees Lead, and we're talking about this mind of our president, Donald Trump. And now we see a mounting of concern. And a determination, this is now irrespective of party, because we have both Democrats and Republicans, significant folk within the party systems, plural, saying we've got to tackle this question. This is a big question, and it cannot be dismissed. What are your thoughts? At 888-874-4888. Ron from L.A., you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Yes. Great program, as usual.
Thank you.
I think you're bringing out excellent points, and that you're also using independent critical thinking, because, you know, 6-8 months ago, you know, he was very critical of the Clinton hustle, and you got a lot of programs and a lot of the details. And now fast forward to today's situation, you got the same thing going on, but I think the way Trump is different, it's like, I gotta get my money up front. I'm not gonna wait till after the presidency to cash in. I gotta cash in right now. And because the public's, as you kind of pointed out, expectations have been constantly set lower and lower on what to expect from these politicians, a good percentage of the American public has no problem with it.
What the question has, though, a big if to it. If this effort that is growing in Congress among Democrats and Republicans alike to subject the president's mind to broad examination, do you think it would stop there and on a case-by-case basis, or do you think that would have put in place a mechanism that people, for political reasons, could use at their whim to achieve a political objective, which would be to destroy the president, any president.
Yes. Just to clear, inform you, I have a background in medicine, and I think technically speaking, on a psychological angle, et cetera, absolutely, he's unstable, which can be documented, you know, from a clinical standpoint, absolutely. But like a lot of things, it's all about arbitrary justice, arbitrary enforcement of rules, regulations, and laws. So, and then in the meantime, too, if you kind of look at a lot of the things that this quote-unquote unstable president is doing in terms of the powers that be, a lot of the things that he's doing is okay with him. You know, bomb Syria, don't do anything about the problem in Haiti. Don't do anything about domestic issues. And just collect the money and the 1%, you know, I put it this way, a good faction of the 1%, are they happy with Clinton? I mean, Freudian slip, they're happy with Trump because he's, you know, he's taking care of them. You know, let him be crazy. Because also, one other quick point I like to make, he's not the first mentally unstable president we've had in this generation. Remember Ronald Reagan.
You know, well,
he had Alzheimer's when he was in office. So, yep. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. But it's something that we should think about because we should look at how they're going to, or if they're going to succeed at pulling off this plan. Thank you for calling in and getting us started today, Ron. I appreciate it. From New York, Patricia, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air, Patricia.
Oh, good afternoon, you trees. I hope all is well. You sound wonderful, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
As you know, I'm a women's healthcare provider, so while I have a medical background, my area of expertise, and actually the area that I'm most weak in, is psychiatry. But I'm going to share with you just a little experience that I have had when I have actually had to seek an evaluation of someone. So these are the problems that I would see going forward in terms of, even though there may be bipartisan support for his evaluation, here are some of the problems that I think might occur. Number one, just like the previous caller said that Ronald Reagan suffered from Alzheimer's, but Ronald Reagan had cover. There were people who protected him because he wasn't doing anything outrageous. So the first thing that one would have to consider with Trump is who defines and who decides that his behavior is outrageous and unstable. Who, number one, is going to be the person that says, yeah, we really need to have this person evaluated? I can't identify anyone, certainly on the Republican side, even though there's bipartisan rumblings behind the scenes, I can't think of anyone, any Republican, who would initiate this process. So you're probably looking at a Democrat. And of course, the first thing the Republicans will say, well, this is a partisan scheme. This is a partisan plan. So that's number one. Who's going to ring the bell? But even if we get beyond, so let's, for argument's sake, say someone rings the bell, who is going to step up and evaluate this boy? Because for every person who says he's unstable, you're going to find someone who says he's fine. So you're now going to then have a battle of the experts and who decides who is correct. So even though there may be rumblings behind the scenes, they're in a real quandary. There is no doubt that this boy fits the DSM-4 category for narcissism and pathology, but I can't identify who's going to ring the bell and then who's going to certify him unstable, because you're going to have somebody on the other side who says he's just fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that that's going to be the main fight, because even if they are being sincere and very sincere about the president's health, mental health, it will come down to a political fight as to who is going to be targeted as the person who is going to try and bring the other party down through a move against Trump. That's how it's going to be seen. You're absolutely right about mm-hmm. that. But by the same token, we have a man who is just in the first half of his presidency. He's duly elected, and he may be making decisions that, you know, may not please people. But how do you get over the argument that, hey, he's elected, he went through the process, and he won?
Well, you know, we have an example, and I think of Jean-Bertrand Aristide in Haiti, who was duly elected, and what happened to him? The United States swept down in the dead of night in an airplane and told him and his wife to get out of the country, right? So the question is, so for me, that's not even the issue. I mean, I listened to his speech this morning in Poland. I watched the whole speech, and I watch him invoke the fact that the borders of Poland was artificially created, and how that created a problem for the Polish people. And he invoked God so much. I mean, I just had to sit in a disbelief as to how theology crept into his speech, and the patriotism in his speech. And I wondered to myself why Americans are not connecting the dots. But I guess maybe nobody listened to the speech.
Well, I don't think people listened to the speech. It happened at an odd time of day, I guess. That's a large piece of it. But he did get done what he went there to do.
Yes.
And religion was a major part of it, to begin to convert, pardon that pun, to convert people's thinking about him as a shallow, narcissistic guy who's out of touch with things, except his own version of reality.
Mm-hmm.
But he needed more than anything else. And Poland, it's all about religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about religion in Poland. So he needed to use the moment to get Polish people to accept him. This side of him, that he is a very religious man. He's not Catholic, unfortunately, but he comes pretty close. That's what he wants to say to folks. You know, I'm not Catholic yet, but as I reach you today, I did meet with the Pope. That should count. And you should understand that I am very, very religious, a deeply religious person who you could trust to do the right thing.
Mm. Well, back to your original question, they're in a quandary as to how they can proceed.
Yep. We should watch this one. This is going to be interesting.
Very
Thanks
interesting.
Thanks so much for your call.
Sure.
Thank you. Mohammed from Queens, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Utrice Lee.
Good afternoon, Mohammed. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and I wish you the very best of health, and I hope everything is improving. I'm going to be very brief because I want other people to get their commentaries in also. I would just say that as a clinician, a psychotherapist, licensed and certified, before we diagnose a patient, what we do is an assessment. And this assessment, if done properly, should take about 3 or 4 sessions. That's about 3 or 4 hours. Now, in the case of Mr. Trump, I do not need to do the assessment because of his behavior I've seen, and this is, and you can check it out in the DSM-4 or 5, he suffers from a narcissistic personality disorder and an impulse control disorder, and also his judgment is very poor. Now, impulse is a sudden urge, and poor judgment is when you don't anticipate the consequences of your actions or behavior. So any clinician, psychotherapist, psychiatrist, could tell you, if they be honest with you, he suffers from a narcissistic personality disorder and a poor impulse control disorder. Thank you very much for hearing my part, and I'll let someone else get in.
Okay. Okay, but I wanted to ask you at least one question.
Yes.
You have diagnosed that. Or somebody could say, well, that's not the normal way to diagnose a patient. You have to actually diagnose the patient.
Well, I'll say this, Eutrice. What you do is when you before you diagnose the person, you bring them in for an interview and you ask them questions, and then you look at their response to the questions. Then that way you make a diagnosis. See, I haven't answered the questions, but he's already answered the questions by his behavior, and it's apparent. Mm-hmm. And if any psychotherapist, psychiatrist, clinical social worker, or even you yourself can look in the DSM-4 and just look under impulse control disorder and look under personality, narcissistic personality disorder, and he clearly meets the requirements.
Well, here's a question, and yes. I don't know if you've ever dealt with a patient who poses this particular concern, and that is the psychiatric piece being one thing, but then you have the political piece. In a situation here, even with somebody who has these issues that they're dealing with, how could you, or how does one take the symptoms of one thing, which would be personal, and then you bring it to the world of politics, which is not personal per se?
That's a very good question, Eutrice. And I'm going to be honest with you. What the Republicans are waiting for, they're waiting for his approval rating to go below 20%. They scared the mess with him because it's a reflection upon him. But now, if they had to be on a regular job, if they had to be evaluated, which most people are after a year, that Senate up there and that House of Representatives, they would have had a negative performance evaluation. And that's what part of what brought Trump in, by them being dysfunctional and impaired. When you look at systems, I don't want to take too much of the time, but you look at a system there, you know, you look at a system, they work together, you know, each little part. And a good example for anyone to start with is their own body. You have 9 systems there, and each of them have a function. Now I'll just go into about maybe 3. You have the circulatory, you have the immune, and you have reproductive. And those systems, when one get out of order, they can throw the whole system out of order. So if you look at your body and you look at the system, say a family system, for example, you know, you have the rules, you have the roles, you have the boundaries, you have the communications, you have problem solving, and you have decision making. And with decision making, that generally goes to the parents. They'll generally make the decisions. And when you look at take those particular elements in that family system apart, you can see what's impaired or dysfunctional. And that Congress was dysfunctional in American people. That's just part of the reason. They were tired of that, and that's how he was able to go into office. But it showed you to a point where America is. But then he didn't really win it. If you listen to, I forget the guy's name, but he had the best election money can buy. And Trump's people, what they did is, like, you got 50 Juan Hernandez, so they would just go around. When they find 2, they'd knock him out. Maria Martinez, you look at that name, you'll find so many, and you said, double voting, trying to register twice. So all the people that he knocked off, had that not happened, Greg Palast, that's the guy, best money election could buy, he didn't really win it anyway. Matter of fact, the last 3 elections were all stolen. Bush, not so much Obama, but both of the Bushes in both terms, and Trump also. So, yeah, we don't need to do the assessment. His behavior has always already showed us or demonstrated some of the defects. Now, if I did assessment, I'm sure I would come up with 3 or 4 more diagnoses.
Oh, my. Well, we have to watch this, because the question that is emerging in my mind is, and this is what will be posed, it may not be an appropriate question as far as many people are concerned, but here's a question. It never happened before that a president had to go before a panel to determine his mental acuity. So what has to happen to make this move, quote, legitimate, unquote?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I don't know, because now in order to assess him, he would have to agree to that and try to be honest. You know, you bring him into a session, you know, you let and see. One thing that will be broken right offhand when we work with a patient or a client, they said consumers now, what you have to do is ensure them of confidentiality, that what they share with you is not shared with anyone else. So I don't know how they would do that. And then make it public.
Me. I don't know how they'll do that. Because he is not about to share anything intimate about himself. That's for sure. He's not going to do it.
That is so true. But his behavior tells so much about him, you know?
So, well, like I said, we will observe this as it unfolds. We see where this is going to be a big fight. And we'll see how he maneuvers legally within these parameters to see if he could get past all the obstacles in his path, and the Republicans and the Democrats seeking to put something in place that says, look, if it could happen now, it could happen again. So we have to try to do something so that we don't end up with a real nut job in the White House. And that is part of our responsibility. So we'll see. I'm so glad you called. Thank you.
Just two quick.
Go ahead.
The controls to those buttons you need to push. And another thing I forgot about, I'll just let it go for now. But anyway, thank you very much for hearing me. I really appreciate it. And I sure wish you your health keep going and improving.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. Well, that brings us to the end of the program, but not to the end of the program. We're going to return to this time and again as things develop. But this is going to be a major issue. I can tell right away. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You want to really stay tuned for that program. Always interesting. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. And we'll see each other tomorrow. It's Free Your Mind Friday. And I'll be in your company. Bye-bye.
When I went down to the local coffee store, the menu went from the ceiling all the way down to the floor. Decaf, cappuccino, or latte, said the cashier. I said, give me a small cup of coffee and let me get the hell up out of here. Y'all know it's crazy. Oh, it's driving me insane. Superman, I just wanna go somewhere. Use my hands, keep it simple.